Chapter 20, About the Magic Word Yabona and a Wolf Hunt at Which Not a Single Shot Was Fired. When the king of the Sunnits and his old cousin had gone back to the tent, Christian and Big Tiger stuffed the silver bowls and the haddocks into their pockets. But their pockets were too small, and the bowls were too big, and they stuck out. Christian picked up the whip. Then they took the water pails and set out to return to the truck. It was a slow journey, however, for they had to put down the heavy pails often to rest. When they were halfway, good fortune came toward them with a Mongol boy who was driving a herd of goats. "You're late," scolded good fortune. "Greencoat is raging for his food." "Oh, woe," cried Christian. "It can't be helped," said good fortune. "Give me the pails. What's that you've got in your pockets?" "We've each got a present," said Big Tiger. "Because we're friends of the king of the Sunnits and his old cousin," Christian explained. "You're what?" asked Good Fortune, astonished. "At first we were not friends," Big Tiger admitted, "but now we are." He showed the silver bowl, and Christian showed his. Good Fortune was so astonished that he could only mumble, "That beats all." The Mongol boy stood by, silent and awestruck. "That's very wonderful," said Good Fortune, "but now I'll take back the pails. You boys go with this lad who lives in the yurt nearby. Help him to drive the goats up to the monastery, because there's a wolf hunt here tomorrow morning, and they have to be put in safety. Hurry up, we're having noodles." Christian and Big Tiger said, "We hear and obey." Then one of them went to each side of the herd of goats, and the Mongol boy walked in the center. Unfortunately, there was no conversation. There wasn't a speck of light in the monastery, but the boy knew his way well. Right next to the first little house, there was a large courtyard into which they drove the goats. On their way back, they met the Mongol who had conducted them to the king's tent. He was holding 6 saddled horses, and he gave Christian and Big Tiger a friendly greeting. The boy tried to speak to him, but the man did not answer. He only said, "Yabona." It seemed to be a word full of significance, for the boy repeated it several times on the way, as if he found joy and delight in it. All the same, no real conversation got going. True, Christian knew quite a lot of Mongolian words, but nothing near 100 yet. "I must ask good fortune what Yabona means," he thought. "It seems to be a magic word." When they reached the hill on which the truck stood, all was dark and silent. There was no good fortune and no green coat, no fire, no pot cooking, and therefore nothing to eat. Christian and Big Tiger looked around in dismay, but the Mongol boy laughed and signaled them to follow him to a yurt, which looked like a gigantic molehill in the darkness, with the moon shining on it. When they reached it, the boy bent down and raised the entrance curtain. Christian quickly laid aside his whip. "Or, or," cried a deep male voice from inside. "That means come in," thought Christian and Big Tiger. Though they were small, they had to bend down, for the timber frame of the entrance was low. "Don't stumble," Good Fortune shouted to them. "It's an unlucky sign if you do." Christian and Big Tiger stepped carefully and found themselves in a round felt tent. In the center, a fire was burning in the same kind of portable iron grate as in the king's tent. All around it, the earth was stamped firm. Polished beams joined to form a square. All the rest of the floor was covered with rugs, and under the rugs were soft felts. Altogether, it was a pleasant dwelling. Opposite the entrance sat the Mongol who had called out, "Or, or." To the left, in the seats of honor, sat Good Fortune and Greencoat. The seats to the right had been left for Christian and Big Tiger. They bowed and were about to say, "How is the respected elder gentleman?" But Good Fortune interrupted them before they had properly begun. "Men who are on terms of friendship with Mongol princes must say, 'Do you sit lightly and well?" he told them. "That is a Mongol greeting. And now sit down, but not with your feet towards the fire." "Is that forbidden?" asked Christian. "In Mongolia nothing is forbidden," said Good Fortune, "but certain things are not allowed because they are impolite." "We are very sorry," said Christian. "Please excuse our slow understanding," said Big Tiger. "Fire is a god," Good Fortune explained. "If you stretch your feet towards it, it is offended, and the master of the house and the whole family are offended. Moreover, it shows that a person has no knowledge of correct etiquette, and such a person loses face, and no one thinks anything of him any longer. This evening you two have acquired a big face, and it's now being told in all the tents that the king gave you a handsome gift, betokening friendship. You must therefore be particularly well behaved."
"We wish to be faultless in our behavior," Big Tiger assured him.
"We shall be very polite from today on," Christian agreed. The Mongol now joined in the conversation. He pointed to the pot on the fire, spoke polite words, and urged them to eat. Christian and Big Tiger drew the silver bowls from their pockets. This made Greencoat stare. His jaw jutted forward, and he tugged at his beard. Good Fortune filled the bowls with noodle soup. There were pieces of meat floating about in the pot, and the host fished out the biggest ones and put them on top of the noodles. "Eat now," said Good Fortune.
"I do not dare," replied Christian timidly, looking over at the entrance, near which he had just noticed a woman and a little girl sitting.
"Don't mind them," said Good Fortune. "Eat."
"One mustn't notice the women," whispered Big Tiger.
Then they started eating, and the boy, Odburing, also got his share. In the course of time, it transpired that the father's name was Serchi, and Good Fortune said that was a magnificent Tibetan name, meaning golden armor.
"Stop showing off your knowledge," said Greencoat crossly.
"My despised knowledge has procured you a good meat dinner," answered Good Fortune.
"That's true," growled Greencoat, and suddenly he nodded amiably, because he remembered his new plan. He stroked his beard and tried to make a pleasant face.
"I hear the young gentlemen are frequenting the company of reigning princes," he said.
"We couldn't help it," Christian explained apologetically. "We were conducted to a tent, and the king was sitting there with his old cousin beside him. Then we said who we were."
"And when we got to know each other better," Big Tiger continued the tale, "we were given these silver bowls as souvenirs."
"Show them to me," said Greencoat.
Big Tiger and Christian, who had finished eating, wiped the bowls clean and handed them to Greencoat.
They were beautifully turned and finely polished, and ornamented around the rim with silver leaves. One could see the knots in the wood, and then again a silver garland. The bottom was particularly beautifully worked, with leaping antelopes, deer, trees, and birds, all in shining silver.
"Well, well," said Greencoat, visibly impressed. "So that's what you get from a king for saying who you are."
"We had a little talk, too," Christian hinted, "but not much." Greencoat gave back the bowls with a friendly grin. He would have liked to shout, "You infernal little liars," or, "You needn't show me a louse with a saddle and say that's a horse." But that might have been detrimental to his plot.
"Watch out that you don't let the bowls drop," he said amiably. "It would be a terrible shame. That's a splendid ring you've got, Big Tiger."
"I've just noticed it too," said Good Fortune. "You haven't been wearing it long."
"I've only been wearing it since today," said Big Tiger casually.
"Is it another present?" asked Greencoat.
"No one gave me a present of this ring."
"But where did you get it from, little son?"
"Well, I just have it," said Big Tiger hesitantly. He really wanted to say nothing more, but when they all kept silently looking at the strange ring, he felt he had to tell a lie.
"My grandfather," he said bravely, "gave me this ring to counteract the splendor of my name."
"Your grandfather is a remarkable man," said Greencoat.
"He says self-abasement and perfect truthfulness are good for the soul."
"Bravo," cried Greencoat. "Your worthy grandfather is a sage of the highest rank."
"Why have you been wearing the ring only since today?" asked Good Fortune.
"Because I wear it only when the moon is in its first quarter," Big Tiger explained, "or when it's past it. Sometimes I wear it when the moon is waxing, or when it's round as a silver bat's. It's all a troublesome secret."
"I know that," cried Greencoat. "It's a lucky ring."
"I don't speak of it," said Big Tiger modestly.
"You're right," said Greencoat. "One must be careful."
"It's unwise to penetrate into the secret workshop of nature," said Christian, trying to change the subject. "There are lucky rings which no one understands. There are also magic words, and I heard one of them on the way." At another time, Greencoat would have snarled nonsense, but now he asked with a great show of interest, "What's the magic word?"
"Yabona," said Christian.
Up till then, Searchy had remained silent, for he understood scarcely a word of Chinese, but now he became animated, slapped his thighs, and cried, "Yabona!" Then he asked Good Fortune all sorts of questions, and Udburing, too, joined in. "Get out your notebook again and write Yabona," said Good Fortune to Christian. "Yabona really means only go, naturally not on foot, for nobody goes on foot in Mongolia as long as he can ride. It means let's start or we're off, and as there's nothing more delightful than traveling, everyone rejoices when Yabona is heard." Searchy now told that the hunt was to begin an hour before sunrise. The wolf would be encircled within a wide radius of the monastery of Orte Golan Sum. In the afternoon, they would hunt at Yellow Hill Gap, and in the evening, somewhere else. This was necessary in order to kill the many wolves that had come down from the north during the winter. By the time Good Fortune had translated Searchy's tale, the fire had burned down, and Searchy pulled a string which closed the smoke vent in the roof of the yurt. "Now it will remain nice and warm, and we shall sleep. So fetch your blankets and sleeping bags," said Good Fortune. Christian and Big Tiger went out to the truck. Big Tiger had just climbed up to hand down the sleeping bags when the most frightful howling filled the air. It sounded as if the whole endless misery of the world was finding voice in a wolf's throat. When the wolf stopped for breath, it was as if a pipe was playing, and when he started again, the howling seemed to come from just behind the yurt. One almost expected his green, glaring eyes, the cloud of his breath, and his bushy tail to appear at any moment. Big Tiger and Christian jumped with fright, and Christian was about to climb onto the truck, but Big Tiger said, "He's a long way off. There's nothing to be afraid of." "Why, then, is he howling like that?" asked Christian. "He's got a sick stomach," said Big Tiger glibly. He jumped down from the truck without waiting for further questions, and they both returned to the yurt. They walked a bit faster than usual, for the night had turned cold, the stars were twinkling, and the wolf had stopped howling. It was probably prowling up for a closer look at the truck, or perhaps it was attracted by the smell of the goats. In the yurt, Searchy pressed on his guests the best places, and when they wanted to lie at the edge, he said, "I'm responsible for your safety. Many people freeze to death if they lie at the edge, but I must go out to the hunt early in the morning, and I won't have time to look after dead people." Saying this, he distributed felt covers and furs, and as each one chose his sleeping place, he said, "Sleep soundly and well." And so they did, for they were all very tired. Christian lay awake for a while, listening, lest the wolf should be prowling around, but his eyes soon closed. Outside, the night passed quietly, the moon disappeared, and the stones of the desert did not stir. Toward morning, Searchy rose quietly and awakened Udburing, and before long a horse was heard stopping before the yurt. Searchy and Udburing went out, and then a rough voice called, "Yabona!" Thereupon Searchy and Udburing rode away with the strange man who had brought the horses. "Who was the man who said Yabona?" asked Christian.
"It was Little Paw," whispered Big Tiger. "I think it was Moonlight," said Christian.
After another hour, Good Fortune got stirring. Usually he slept 8 hours non-stop. Then, when he awoke, he did not waste much time yawning. He just looked around, noted where he was, jumped up, and got busy lighting the fire, fetching water, filling the tank with gasoline, and being generally industrious. But Searchy's wife would allow none of this.
"Lie quiet and rest," she said.
"I don't want to lie quiet," Good Fortune objected. "You have to," said the Mongol woman, laughing, and without more ado, she seated herself on him as if he were a bench. "You're our honored guest, and you have to obey." She emptied the ashes and revived the few glowing embers. Then she filled the pot with water, threw a few pieces of brick tea into it and a good pinch of salt, opened the smoke vent, and busied herself with cleaning until the tea boiled. Christian, who was following the woman's movements, saw that it was still dark outside, so one could remain lying down and talk for a bit, as the ancient Romans used to do. Why, they even ate and drank lying down, and no one came and told them to sit up. But just as Christian had thought of a suitable question to start a conversation about the hunt, Good Fortune said, "Get up, men, roll up your sleeping bags. We're starting." "But it's still dark," said Christian, pointing to the smoke vent through which pale stars were shining. "We must get away," said Good Fortune, "otherwise we'll disturb the hunters and get held up." "I'd love to see a wolf, or even two," Christian admitted. Good Fortune had no such desire. He said the hunt would begin at sunrise, and they must be on the road by then, for he wanted to drive as far as Cow Pond today, and that was at least 700 li. So Christian and Big Tiger got up, and Greencoat greeted them amiably with, "Good morning, young princes." The housewife filled their bowls with tea, into which she shook a handful of yellow millet.
"What do we do with this?" asked Christian under his breath. "I don't know," whispered Big Tiger. "I'm not a rooster."
"Set to," cried Good Fortune encouragingly. "This is a breakfast for eating and drinking." He raised his bowl, took a gulp of tea, and then chewed the millet that had swum into his mouth with it.
"I know that," said Greencoat. "It's Mongolian."
"We didn't know it," said Big Tiger, "but now we know it too. And it tastes good."
When Good Fortune stood up to go out, the woman and the girl hastened out before him, and Good Fortune said that was the custom here, and that it belonged to the Mongol Joss.
"Ene you beno?" asked Christian.
"The Mongol Joss is the law of the steppe," Good Fortune explained. "It comes down from the time of Genghis Khan, and every man of honor must live in accordance with it." They went over to the truck, and Good Fortune poured hot water into the radiator, as he had done the previous morning at Whitestone. But the motor wouldn't start. "Hand me the little can with the red stripe," he cried. Christian handed it down from the truck and watched Good Fortune take a little squirt, fill it from the can, and inject some of the liquid into each cylinder. "Now," said Good Fortune, satisfied, "the car will bound forward like an antelope." He handed back the can and went in front again.
"What's the name of the stuff in that can?" asked Big Tiger.
"I'll look and see," said Christian, opening the screw cap and sticking in his nose. But he recoiled in haste.
"It's ether," he said, coughing. "My father uses this stuff when he cuts people's stomachs open."
"Does he do that often?" Big Tiger inquired.
"Almost every day," said Christian, "but of course only when someone wants him to."
"Look out!" shouted Good Fortune at that moment. "The Lord of the Steppe is coming! Stay up there!" He leaped into the driver's cab and slammed the door.
"What's up?" asked Christian, letting the screw cap drop.
"Good Fortune means the wolf," said Big Tiger calmly. Christian jumped up. Dawn was breaking in all its glory over the hills. The sun was rising slowly, and above the valley strips of mist floated, thin as a breath. Here and there, galloping riders were emerging out of the mist. More and more of them appeared, and they were shouting and swinging lassos fastened to sticks. In a few moments, hell had broken loose round the height.
"The hunters are coming," cried Christian, but Big Tiger shook his head.
"You think the wolf would come up here just on his own?" asked Christian.
"Yes," Big Tiger asserted. "They always make for hills and mountains when they're pursued."
"He's coming," cried Christian. "No, they're coming. There are two of them."
Big Tiger looked eagerly over the rampart of drums. Up the mountainside, where they had driven the goats to the monastery last evening, came two wolves in full flight, pursued by a horseman. With his left hand he was whipping his horse to the utmost speed, while in the right he held his lasso aloft, ready to throw. The wolves were running for their lives. Then the man stood up in the stirrups, and the horse galloped all out. It was almost flying. But the wolves were going all out, too, until at last one of them became exhausted and was caught in the lasso. There was a mighty tug, and the cord pulled taut, lifting the wolf high off the ground. He fell on his back, and the hunter and his horse, both possessed with the same fury, galloped downhill, dragging the wolf behind them. He turned several somersaults, then rolled over dead. The other wolf had reached the height. He stopped, exhausted, not 10 paces from the truck, his flanks rising and falling, and looked around at his enemies, who were now pressing uphill, their reins hanging. The wolf wanted to break away again, but he couldn't, for riders had suddenly appeared from behind the yurt, too. Then, seeing he was hemmed in, the wolf crouched on the ground, his back arched and his forelegs straight, gnashed his teeth, snarled hoarsely with his jaws open, then snapped them shut with a crack. Big Tiger felt his spine going hot and cold, and Christian was no longer so keen on seeing a wolf near. Both gazed as if bewitched as he crouched lower and lower, at the same time creeping backwards. By the time the first hunter galloped by with his lasso aloft, the wolf had disappeared. "He's sitting under the truck," whispered Christian. "It can't be helped," said Big Tiger calmly. The circle of hunters had closed in. The horses snorted, foam dropped from their mouths. They pawed the ground, and the riders shouted a kind of tally-ho at the top of their voices. Some of them tried to poke their poles under the truck, but the wolf refused to be dislodged. In spite of all the noise, they could hear the whistling of his breath and the snapping of his jaws. Good Fortune opened the little window at the back of his cab. "What's up?" he asked. "The wolf is sitting under the truck," Big Tiger reported, coolly. Greencoat grinned. He was safe and sound, and it was easy for him to be complacent. "Drive on," he said to Good Fortune. "It's high time." "Certainly, if you get out and start up." "You know I don't know how to do that," replied Greencoat, abashed. "I'll show you how," said Good Fortune affably, half opening the door. "Help!" shouted Greencoat. "He wants to set the wolf on me." "Don't shout like that," said Good Fortune, laughing and shutting the door. At this juncture, a rider in a blue coat and with a fur-trimmed hat pulled well down over his forehead detached himself from the crowd of hunters. He seemed to be the only one who did not have a lasso. Instead, slung around the right wrist, he had a leather strap to which was attached a leather bag, apparently full of some heavy stuff, for it hung straight down and hardly swung at all. "Moonlight," whispered Christian. "It can't be helped," murmured Big Tiger. "It's Little Paw." The rider urged his unwilling horse right up against the truck door and tapped sharply at the window. "It is me," he cried half aloud in Chinese. "Open." Good Fortune turned pale, but he obeyed mechanically. Hardly had he opened the window than Moonlight said in a tone which brooked no opposition, "Remember your promise." "I remember it," Good Fortune answered. "Then get out and start the car, quick." Without waiting for a reply, Moonlight moved off, but pulled up again a few yards behind the truck. Christian and Big Tiger felt desperately frightened. They looked first at Good Fortune and then at Moonlight, who was staring with lowered eyes between the wheels of the truck, swinging the leather strap with its weighted bag. Good Fortune got out, pale but completely composed. Almost as if in a trance, he walked to the front, bent down, and turned the crank. The motor began to hum, the truck trembled gently, and Good Fortune walked back to his seat as if there were no Moonlight and no wolf. He shut the little window at the back, released the brakes, and started up. The car gave a few jerks, the drums banged together, and the tally-ho of the horde of hunters rent the air. Christian and Big Tiger watched Moonlight's horse rear as a gray shadow shot from under the truck and hung for a moment onto the reins of the terrified animal. They also saw Moonlight's raised arm and heard the swish of the leather strap with its lead-filled bag, but the bag missed its mark. The wolf, in his blind assault, had bitten through the horse's reins. His paws, which were seeking the hunter's hands, did not reach high enough and clawed the chest of the rearing horse instead, leaving a bleeding gash. The wolf fell, rolled on the ground, jumped up again, and suddenly there he was, hanging by his forepaws onto the side of the truck. In their terror, Christian and Big Tiger nearly stopped breathing, for simultaneously with the paws, the head appeared, with bared fangs and flashing, desperate eyes. With his last ounce of strength, the wolf was trying to pull up his hindquarters, and Big Tiger and Christian saw with horror that he was about to succeed. Up rose the head, then the shoulder blades, and the pointed muzzle pushed forward between them. Without stopping to think, Christian grabbed the can with the red stripe and poured a good dose of the contents down the wolf's throat. Then he shut his eyes, and when he opened them again, the wolf had disappeared. Moonlight's strange weapon swished through the air. There was a short, solid bang, and a cry of jubilation rose from 100 throats. Good Fortune, who had not yet stirred from his place, let go with the horn and wanted to make his way out through the surge of riders, but it was impossible. While he was thinking how to make a fast getaway, Moonlight tapped on the window again. "Get out," he said, gravely. Good Fortune opened the door obediently, and Moonlight dismounted. Odd Boring came forward, took the wounded horse, and saddled a fresh one for Moonlight. Most of the hunters dismounted to have a close look at the dead wolf. "He has crushed his skull," said Big Tiger, who had remained in the truck with Christian because from up there they had the best view of everything that was going on. "Come over here," said Christian, plucking Big Tiger by the sleeve. He pointed furtively at Moonlight and Good Fortune. The two appeared to have something important to say to each other, for they moved away out of earshot. Big Tiger and Christian stood behind the drums and looked on. Greencoat, too, bent forward inquisitively, and believing himself unobserved, noiselessly opened the window on his side. But all the same, he could not hear what Good Fortune and Moonlight were saying. Moonlight was apparently trying to talk Good Fortune into something. Then he stepped back, bowed, put his hand into his belt pouch, and drew something out, which he offered to Good Fortune with both hands, and which Good Fortune took with a reverential air, held to his nose, and then handed back. They bowed again, and then turned and rejoined the others, laughing and talking, and suddenly the best of friends. Greencoat closed the window again. "Hi, boys," cried Good Fortune merrily. "Where are you hiding?" "We're here," said Big Tiger and Christian, emerging from behind the drums. "Come down," cried Moonlight. "You must be mighty proud of yourselves." "The young do not wish to put themselves forward," replied Big Tiger politely. Good Fortune snuffled and blew his nose as he came toward the truck. "Have you spilled the can with the red stripe?" he asked. "Some of it has been spilled," Christian admitted. "But only a little," said Big Tiger. Then he described their adventure with the wolf, which Christian had anesthetized, and Moonlight said to Good Fortune, "Your two younger brothers are heroes and sons of heroes. Let us speak two words of homage to them." "Do as you like," said Good Fortune, "but they've thrown away enough ether to knock out 10 wolves. He climbed into the truck to see if there was some left in the can, and Moonlight lifted Christian and Big Tiger down. He led them through the throng of riders, up to the man who in the beginning had pursued the 2 wolves alone and killed the first one with his lasso. They bowed, and Big Tiger said, "We salute the Duke of Hunta, and we wish him riches, good luck, and a long life." "How do you know who I am, my sons?" asked the Duke. "The King of the Sunnits said, 'I shall ask the Duke of Hunta to lead the hunt,'" said Christian. "Since you opened it, you must be the Duke." "Heaven knows what kind of boys you are," cried the Duke, astonished. "Will you ride with me?" "I've never been on a horse yet," said Big Tiger meekly. "We beg you graciously to excuse us," said Christian. "We have to drive to Cow Pond today." "To Cow Pond?" cried the Duke, displeased. "What do you want there?" "Perhaps there's a tent there in which we can sleep," said Big Tiger. Moonlight remarked that there was a tent there, and when the Duke looked at him inquiringly, he added, "The merchant Greencoat is also traveling in the horseless car, as he intends to spend the night with his agent at Cow Pond." "Look out," warned the Duke. "You're in no good company." "We know that," said Christian, sadly. "We are sitting in distress under a leafless tree," said Big Tiger. "Stay with me, then," the Duke proposed. "You will be safe in my tent. Each of you shall have a horse, and I shall teach you to hunt the wolf with a lasso." "We thank you for your immeasurable kindness," said Big Tiger. "But we must go home," said Christian. "My father and mother are waiting for me, and my old Amma is waiting, too. If I don't go home, people will say, 'This Amma is guilty of letting Compass Mountain get lost.' She will be dismissed, and she will lose face." "In that case," the Duke agreed, "you must certainly get home quickly. The king told me you're going to Xinqiang." "Yes, we're going that road," said Christian. "The honorable commander in Urumqi is to help us," said Big Tiger. "It's a long way to Urumqi," said the Duke anxiously, and turning to Moonlight, he asked, "How is the road?" "Humaga, there's nothing to fear." "Is that really true? You know what I mean, little paw." "Beyond the Etzengal, all beneath the heavens is in safe hands," Moonlight replied, and he added a few words in Mongolian. The Duke was reassured, and he called Odd Boring, who, at his order, brought 2 small bags. "Here is a worthless gift," he said, taking from his belt a sky-blue haddock. Presenting it ceremoniously, he continued, "Please be gracious enough to accept my poor gift." Christian and Big Tiger bowed low. As they murmured thanks 10,000 times, Christian suddenly remembered the Sunit Wang saying that it was not permissible in Mongolia either to accept or present a gift without a haddock. He quickly put his hand in his pocket, and while Big Tiger took the sky blue silk cloth from the Duke's hands, Christian offered as return gift the haddock which he had received from the Sunit Wang. The Duke of Hanta accepted it with thanks and put it away in his belt. Moonlight stood behind the Duke, smiling. He raised his right thumb several times, and that meant, "Well done, Compass Mountain." Christian and Big Tiger then bade farewell. Moonlight accompanied them back to the truck, and as he lifted them in, Good Fortune sounded the horn. The truck moved off slowly, and the Mongols fell back, raising their lasso poles aloft like spears with a great cry. "Yabona!" they bellowed in chorus. "Say Yabona!" The cry rolled like thunder over the gravelly plain, and the echoing hills answered. In the midst of the riders and horses stood Moonlight, and because he had no lasso, he pulled off his fur hat and waved it aloft, and the red scar across his forehead turned crimson and almost blue, so loudly and heartily did he cry, "Yabona! Say Yabona!"